Americans share the Nobel in economics for studying unemployment.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Two Americans and a British Cypriot economist have won the Nobel Prize for Economics this morning. They'll share the $1.5 million prize. Reporter Janet Babin tells us their work is timely. It explains how economic policy affects the jobs market.
One of the co-winners was Christopher Pissarides at the London School of Economics. At a noisy news conference at the school today, Pissarides explained that his work on unemployment can be helpful to emerging markets.
When you are growing very fast, you think you can give lots of...
Pissarides said that young markets swept up in a boom time can often provide too many benefits too soon. Then when the bust comes, they're left with lots of unemployed workers eligible for benefits. Pissarides says their work can inform these emerging markets about how to handle the workforce. He'll share the prize with Dale Mortensen at Northwestern University and economist Peter Diamond at MIT. President Obama had tapped Diamond to join the Federal Reserve, but the Senate failed to approve his nomination before the midterm election break. The winning research is certainly timely. It also showed why lots of people remain unemployed, even when there are plenty of job openings around. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Now, from the unemployed to the highly valued. Remember when Wall Street firms defended their big bonuses by saying, we have to pay these people a lot if we want to attract top talent. Today's Wall Street Journal reports some of the giant signing bonuses haven't worked out so well lately. Joining us live from New York is the author of this morning's piece, Aaron Lucchetti. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Securities firms like Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and others paid these six- and seven-figure bonuses to lure brokers away from rival companies. Why haven't they worked out?
Well, the markets have been tough. It's a very competitive world for brokers right now, and with markets not soaring like they used to, it's difficult for brokers to make money, and it's even more difficult for the firms to make money off brokers when they've given these big guaranteed bonuses.
Should that make me think any differently about these firms' argument that they have to pay huge bonuses to keep effective top talent?
You know, it's really a variation on that theme, and they've said that for, you know, years about traders, and they've said that about investment bankers, but it's also true of brokers. Brokers can jump across the street, go from UBS to Wells Fargo or vice versa, and so the firms really want to keep those brokers. The broker's one of the more stable sources of revenues for these companies, especially in a world where trading is up and down and is facing heavier regulation.
That's right. The brokerage business, that was supposed to be the stable part of the business.
Right. It's still stable, but it's just less profitable for the firms when you pay, you know, 30, 40, 50% of all the revenues to the brokers. The broker's argument, of course, is, hey, we're the ones that are talking to clients. They trust me, not necessarily the firm, especially after what's happened with the financial crisis. So I'm pretty valuable here.
And just a few more seconds, Aaron, you write that some of these firms are going to arbitration and getting these bonuses back. Is that like a mortgage borrower reneging on their promise to pay back the loan?
It's a great argument. The firms say, look, you know, you signed the contract. You have to live by it. You're in a business of trust and in a business where people are supposed to value your words. So to go back on a contract is pretty difficult.
Wall Street Journal reporter Aaron Lucchetti joining us live. Thanks a lot.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Now let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials are up another 13 points this morning. That makes it 11,019. The NASDAQ up 0.3%, and the S&P 500 up about 0.2%.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0. By the new Harvard Business Review. The July-August issue is on newsstands now, featuring an in-depth interview with Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. And by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality.
The Internet has rendered so many things obsolete, but it has yet to kill the phone book. I'm joined by the author of a new book called The Phone Book, The Curious History of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. Ammon Shea, welcome to Marketplace.
Hi, thanks for having me.
If no one reads it, why does the phone book still land with a thud on my driveway?
Well, there are several reasons for that. The first is that everybody likes to say that they don't want the phone book, but when you actually try to take it away from them, there's a good amount of protestation on their parts. Particularly people who are not necessarily conversant with the internet, say people of a certain age, the elderly, they tend to become a little discomfited when you tell them you're going to take their telephone books away.
And what's the next reason the phone book survives?
Well, for Yellow Pages, particularly because they're great business. It's a wonderful profit machine. And in 1996, Congress passed the Telecommunications Bill, which was ostensibly aimed at fostering competition. And there was a little tiny bit of it that said basically anybody that wants to can now print a Yellow Pages. They just need to get the telephone numbers and you can go ahead.
That explains why there are so many more now than when I was a kid.
They've exploded.
It sounds like you love the phone book, Ammon, but it is doomed, right?
Well, one would think it's doomed. However, I think innate human laziness probably has more to do with its survival than anything else. For instance, in Norway, which is considerably more environmentally conscious than we are here, they've had an opt-out policy in place for years, meaning if you don't want a telephone book, just call us and we won't send you one. And approximately 7% of the population takes the time to pick up the phone and say, don't send me a telephone book. Conversely, if you have an opt-in policy saying you only get a telephone book if you ask for one, in the United States, polls have found that approximately 2% of the population will say, yes, I want a telephone book. So until they get around to changing the laws saying you don't need to have a telephone book and decide whether they're going to do an opt-in or an opt-out, I think the book is pretty much going to stick with us.
It's called The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. Ammon Shea, thank you.
Well, thanks very much.
And finally, some fans of the rock group Weezer, their early stuff anyway, think that the band's music has been disappointing for years now, and they're trying to raise $10 million to pay Weezer to stop releasing records. And how does Weezer feel about the criticism? They don't care. In fact, the drummer says if they can make it $20 million, we'll do the deluxe breakup. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
New smartphone apps aim to keep people from driving and texting at the same time, and that's great and all, but don't you have to use the phone to turn on the app?
You can activate a feature where every time a text comes in, it will read it to you, and that part works fine. It's answering back that becomes a real problem.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Both hands on the wheel, please. Story is next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.